From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Within the city of Wilmington, statues and street names honoring key members of the Confederacy pepper the landscape. At the entrance to downtown Wilmington, on one corner stands a statue of George Davis, Confederate Attorney General. At a nearby intersection, a monument honoring soldiers of the Confederacy stands. Just last week, vandals splattered red paint on both statues. It appeared, according to the Wilmington Police Department, that someone attached a rope to one statue, possibly in an effort to pull it down. This was a rather mild reflection of what's happening in other parts of the Southeast. Protesters have toppled Confederate memorials in cities around the South, including Durham, North Carolina. Some municipal leaders, like Mayor Mitch Landrieu of New Orleans, have decided to bring them down on their own. As it stands now, the statues in Wilmington will not come down legally. A North Carolina law passed in 2015 provides for the protection of monuments and memorials commemorating events, persons, and military service of North Carolina history. This effectively removes the power from communities to make any decisions about how Confederate monuments should be treated. Today, we continue the public and the local exploration about how Confederate statues and monuments should be handled, whether they should be removed because they represent the fight for slavery, or whether taking down these statues is a wave of political correctness that is destroying important historical markers. With us today are three professors from the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Earl Sheridan is a professor in the Department of Public and International Affairs. He is also a member of Wilmington City Council, soon to complete his third four-year term. Earl Sheridan, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Chris Fonville is an associate professor in the History Department at UNCW, where he specializes in the American Civil War, the Lower Cape Fear, and North Carolina. Chris Fonville, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for hosting this conversation.
Glad to do it. And Monica Gisolfi is an associate professor in UNCW's History Department with a focus on the history of the American South. Monica Gisolfi, welcome to Coastline.
Glad to be here.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. Are you a Southerner born and raised who appreciates having the monuments adorning the downtown landscape? Did you move here from another part of the country and are baffled by the public veneration of the Confederacy? Give us a call and tell us how you feel about having these statues occupy the public space. You can reach us on this Thursday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. Chris Fonville, explain for us, for those who aren't familiar with this part of Wilmington history, what is the meaning and the purpose of the George Davis statue, Attorney General of the Confederacy? What does that statue say?
Well, the statue was erected in 1912 by the United Daughters of the Confederacy. It was to pay tribute to Wilmington's most eminent lawyer and also chronicler of the Lower Cape Fear. That said, it also recognizes that he was the last Attorney General of the Confederate States of America, 1864 to 1865, for which he did spend time in prison. So I think it reflects all of those things.
So is that statue of George Davis up there because of his role in the Confederacy or the Confederacy and other roles that he played during his lifetime?
Well, I think you could make the argument because it was put up by the United Daughters of the Confederacy that that's the main thing that they wanted to pay tribute to. But I also think that because he was one of Wilmington's leading lawyers and most venerated citizens and early historian of the Lower Cape Fear, they wanted to recognize that as well.
Earl Sheridan, you're a Wilmingtonian born and raised. When you pass by the George Davis statue and you look at it, what do you think about it and how do you feel when you look at it?
Well, I've always been offended by that statue as well as the other statue about the soldiers of the Confederacy. I see it as praising slave owners, and folks who were fighting to uphold slavery. I think these are the historians. They might know more about this than I. But a lot of these statues were put up around the South after Reconstruction was over, when Southerners got control again of their local governments, the Redeemers, the white Southerners. And I think these statues and monuments were kind of put up to, in a way, to say, we're in control again, and we want to remember history as we want to remember it. And so, I had an offense as far as the statues were concerned.
And yet, you said at a recent city council meeting that you don't think they should necessarily come down. Why?
Well, I'm not going to fight to keep them up. I don't care for them, but I do think another a compromise on this. I'd like to see more statues, more memorials to African Americans in our community, to people who have made contributions. I'd like to see, and I said this at the council meeting, I'd like to see a statue of Abraham Galloway on Market Street, across from that George Davis statue or whatever.
And for those who aren't familiar,
oh, I'm
who
sorry.
Was Abraham Galloway?
Abraham Galloway was runaway slave, Union soldier, Union spy, and one of the first black legislators. When he died, his funeral was held at St. Paul Episcopal Church, and they said it was maybe the largest funeral to be held up until that time. And so I'd like to see a statue of someone like Abraham Galloway or David Walker, who wrote David Walker's Appeal Opposing Slavery, or various other African Americans. I think part of the problem with these Confederate statues is that they're the only thing that are out there. They are what are defining our community. And I don't want our community to be defined only as a haven for the Confederacy.
Chris Fondel.
I'll just add to the Abraham Galloway story. He was the most powerful African-American in North Carolina during the Civil War. After Union forces captured and occupied eastern North Carolina, with the exception of Wilmington by 1862, Abraham Galloway returned from Canada, and Union military forces did nothing without the permission and authorization of Abraham Galloway. And he became an important figure in the state legislature after the war. And I absolutely agree with Earl. In fact, he and I have talked about how we go about erecting a statue to Galloway. And I hope that comes to fruition to help balance the story.
You would support the
what, absolutely,
that would be a contextualization.
Absolutely.
Monica Gisolfi, I know that to you, that doesn't solve what you see as a problem here. And can you explain why erecting statues that honor African-American heroes or, critical figures in history doesn't solve the issue for you?
Erecting a statue to David Walker or Abraham Galloway or Frederick Douglass, what that would do is it would set up a false equivalence where we would be communicating the message that George Davis and Confederate soldiers fought for freedom, and so too did Abraham Galloway and Frederick Douglass, just as an example. So I think that what it would do is that it would further elevate and further legitimize the Confederate statues that are there. And these Confederate statues, as Chris pointed out, honor men who broke with the government and waged a war to defend the institution of slavery. And so that's what I see as a problematic, as setting up this false equivalence where we're saying George Davis is equal to, in terms of his dedication to the Republic, his fight for freedom is equal to someone like Abraham Galloway or Frederick Douglass.
Now, is there a difference here? You, Monica Gisolfi, are looking at this strictly from, you're looking at George Davis as the last Attorney General of the Confederacy, and that's what you see, the values of the Confederacy being marked and upheld in a public space. Is there a gap here between people who grew up in Wilmington who look at George Davis and see somebody else, a chronicler, a historian, a good father and grandfather?
Well, I think we need to look at what the monument says. And the monument honors him for being Attorney General to the Confederacy. And I think as Chris pointed out, the United Daughters of the Confederacy erected this monument to honor and vindicate the Confederacy. Obviously, he was many more things than simply the Attorney General of the Confederacy. But if we look at when and why this monument was erected, it's very clear. It's very clear that they're honoring him for his role in the Confederacy. And obviously, he did many more things than that. But as it's written onto the landscape, it's written onto the landscape to memorialize and commemorate the Confederacy, and to, as I said, to vindicate the cause of the Confederacy and to rewrite the reason why Confederates broke with the Union and waged a war. They waged a war to defend the institution of slavery, and we know that.
That's okay.
We know that because they told us.
And when we come back from this break, Earl Sheridan, Chris Fonville, we also want to hear from you on that point. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking about Wilmington's Confederate history, its treatment of that history through statues and street names. Do you think these monuments are an important reflection of local history and removing them would desecrate the downtown landscape? Or do you see these statues as a tangible expression of white supremacy? Call us during this live Thursday show at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. We're talking today about the Confederate monuments in Wilmington, the local streets named after members of the Confederacy, and why the conversation surrounding these markers is so fraught with controversy. With us today are three professors from the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, Monica Gisolfi and Chris Fonville, both teach in the history department and specialize in the history of the American South. Earl Sheridan is a professor in UNCW's Department of Public and International Affairs. He's also completing his third term as a member of Wilmington City Council. And we're seeking your input today. What do you think and feel when you look at George Davis on the corner of 3rd and Market Street in downtown Wilmington? Tell us about it by calling us during the live Thursday discussion at 910-343-1138 or by emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. And in that first segment, we talked a little bit about this idea of erecting statues to African-American heroes, key members of history who are not currently reflected on the landscape. Earl Sheridan, Chris Fonville, you've both talked about that. And Earl Sheridan, you've characterized that as something of a compromise in lieu of pulling down the statues to the Confederacy.
Yes, and I would also feel that maybe plaques or information could be added closer to those Confederate statues talking about slavery, talking about what happened with slavery, so that people can see this, and it could be kind of a teaching moment to them as far as these things are concerned. Not just merely venerating those people, but talking about the context and what happened, what was happening with slavery and that kind of thing. And so, again, I think those kinds of things could be things that could be, could be added.
Chris Fonville.
Well, I want to take issue with just one thing that Monica said, that erecting a statue to Abraham Galloway or David Walker or William B. Gould would somehow elevate the status of George Davis. I don't really see it as a competition. That like Earl, that it would help balance the story. I think it's also important to understand that these statues represent a part of the urban and historical landscape. Let me just read what Tony Wren, architectural historian, wrote about these. One of the prime items of Wilmington street furniture and civic art, the Confederate monument, with its two bronze figures, one representing courage, the other self-sacrifice, which we can all appreciate whether they fought for the Confederacy or for the North, is also a fine piece of sculpture and work of civic art. The other thing to remember is...
Now, is Tony Wren a white guy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. He wrote an architectural history of Wilmington. Mm-hmm. But it's important to understand these statues do not reflect who we are. They represent who we were. And that's an important distinction to make. There's a letter to the editor by the head of the United Daughters of the Confederacy out of Richmond today, Patricia Boyd, I think her name is, and she makes that distinction. That the UDC of old is not the UDC of today, and the UDC's views have changed.
Well, explain the change in the views.
Well, I think
because right now
the vast majority of white Southerners understand what the war was about, and let's just set the record straight: the war was about perpetuating slavery.
Right.
Alexander Stevens, vice president of the Confederacy, said that in his cornerstone speech. In his early address to the Confederate Congress, Jefferson Davis made that. There's no question that that's what the war was about.
Right. And so then, so help those of us who didn't grow up with this, because we look at, you know, something like the statue of George Davis, and we see a monument that validates and venerates the ideals expressed by the Confederacy, which was something that lost. We I think, generally agree now that the Confederates were on the wrong side of the war. They fought against the Union. What about that? It shines some light on history. What about that should be venerated?
U.S. Grant said it best when talking about Robert E. Lee. He said he fought hard, he fought valiantly, but he fought for a very bad cause. The statues were put up to venerate that past, but now we can learn from them. Again, they don't represent who we are today, our own values, but we can learn from the past. And I think that bringing them down will deny us an opportunity to do that. As Earl said, I'd be all for putting up some kind of plaques or markers that would provide some historical context. And how you would go about doing that, you'd put together some kind of committee. It could be a member of the UDC. It could be a member of the NAACP. I mean, a number of people could contribute to that effort so that you get a list of all the arguments for and against, the merits, demerits, whatever. I think people are intelligent enough to figure it out on their own.
And I want to get to some of our callers. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the treatment of Confederate monuments in downtown Wilmington specifically. You can call us during the live Thursday show at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. Claudia from Pender County, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
I wanted to comment further on the idea of adding to the monument landscape. I am personally not for pulling down the monuments that we have, but I would like to see them have more context. And I would also like to see commemorated some of the people who arguably added even more to North Carolina's history in a positive way. And I think one person who's already been mentioned, Abraham Galloway, as a legislator, he was key in having public education for all put into the 1868 state constitution, as I understand it. And also another person who doesn't get nearly enough recognition is George E. Davis, not the Confederate attorney general, but George E. Davis, who was an African-American professor at Biddle University. And then when he retired from that in 1920, he traveled the state organizing communities to help them raise funds and organize to build Rosenwald schools, which were schools that communities helped to build during the segregation era when the school boards were not building schools for their children.
And so, Claudia, then when you hear Monica Gisalfi
say something like, if we erect statues to African American heroes from different times and we flesh out that era with these monuments, we're creating false equivalencies between, say, Abraham Galloway and George Davis. What do you say to that?
Well, I'm troubled when I go by the George Davis statue every time I read what's on there, and he talks about being a, you know, something like a pillar of Southern grace and manhood and Christianity. And, you know, it is, it's bitter, but I just really think we ought to try to strive to contextualize it more with more plaques and education about the context and, you know, everything that he did in his life and the cause that he was associated with. Great. And I also think that we're not just talking about, we're not talking about people who just contributed to African American progress. I'm talking about people who changed our state for the better, because George E. Davis greatly expanded educational access for our state, and that impacted that impacted all the races, because they were using plans and technical assistance from the Rosenwald Fund to build schools for whites as well.
Right.
And so there were a lot of other things that were collaborations and contributions that improved the entire state to a great degree that we don't currently recognize.
Claudia, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate you weighing in. We have Anne from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air. Hello, Anne? It seems like we do not have Anne from Wilmington. Gary from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air. Hello, Gary. Gary, are you there?
I'm here.
Great.
I'm here.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to comment on the statue. I definitely agree with the false equivalency. And I was always taught that compromise is not always a good thing, because compromise means that you still gave up something. And I think that if we're going to be a progressive community within the state, maybe we need to create a new way and to take a new stance, to sacrifice who we were to who we are now, to quote the other professor in the room, and take the statues down. There is a place for history, and that is in the museums. So why not put the statues in a museum for people who want to go pay and see the history of the Confederacy, but to have it in a public space that you pass by and see every day, to something that was such a heinous act coming from a young black male that is very offensive. I think that's just wrong to have in a public view for all to see. I just think there's a better place for it.
Gary, thank you so much for weighing in on that. Earl Sheridan, is this sometimes a discussion amongst white people? I mean, in other words, are there any African American people who would say, yes, there is value in keeping George Davis at the entrance to downtown Wilmington?
I don't know. There probably are.
And I realize you can't speak for all. Certainly understand that. But but when we hear the arguments, it's always white people saying there's value in this, and we shouldn't desecrate.
Well, I've talked to other African Americans in Wilmington about the idea of adding statues and not necessarily taking down the ones. And some of them say, "Oh yeah, we see that." I think there probably are some that feel that way. I think that what has happened, though, sometimes the wave of history does certain things. I think Charlottesville has people justifiably in a very emotional and angry state, or whatever it is. I think that what our state legislature needs to do is to allow cities and communities to deal with these statues, to have discussions about what to do about them. We need a public discussion about it, like this right here. actually Charlottesville, you know, they had a commission that studied this for about a year and made a suggestion to the city council.
Mm-hmm. Which is an idea that Chris Fonville is proposing also.
And so we need to have, I disagree with the state legislature saying cities and towns can't touch these statues. Cities and towns need to have this debate, have this discussion, and decide. And cities and towns might decide different, various ways of dealing with the statues and that kind of thing.
We have an email from Don. He writes, if the North Carolina state law says local municipalities cannot make the decision to remove monuments, shouldn't the law also state local municipalities cannot make the decision to erect monuments? And I think that's a rhetorical question. Dan,
I think a lot of the monuments were not really erected by the cities and towns. They were, private entities that did them. But I mean, they were put in public spaces, but they were not erected by the cities and towns.
Every monument in Wilmington was put up through private donations. That's an important distinction.
And how does that happen? Do they get a permit from the city to do it? How are they able to take, say, the median at, you know, 3rd and Market Street? Who gives permission for that?
Well, I haven't researched how the George Davis statue was erected in 1912, but I'm sure that the city council probably gave its permission for that statue to occupy
to
the public space.
Yes.
Just as we did when we put up the 1898 monument on North 4th Street.
Right. Monica Gisolfi.
I'd like to just go back. I think we're setting up a false binary here. I know many white Southerners who believe that we have a moral obligation to bring these monuments down. So I don't really think that this is a discussion where all African Americans believe we should take them down and all white Southerners believe we should keep them up. You have Jenny Horn, the Republican South Carolina legislator who was a descendant of Jefferson Davis, who gave an impassioned speech on the floor of the House in South Carolina arguing to take down the Confederate flag. Other descendants of Robert E. Lee, Jefferson Davis, Stonewall Jackson, have come forward in the past weeks calling for the removal of these monuments. So I think it's important to get at the heart of this is not an issue where all white people think one way and all black people think another way. I also think that it's important to sort of think through this idea of historical markers and having interpretive markers, which seems to many people the answer. And we actually have a case in our midst about that reveals that this isn't the answer at all. The United Daughters of the Confederacy dedicated and unveiled a new interpretive marker down at Fort Fisher, so 20 miles from here.
And that was just earlier this year.
That was less than 4 months ago.
Yeah.
And the marker reads, quote, "A constitutional defense of states' rights, not the institution of slavery, provoked disunion." This is entirely historically inaccurate. And we can view this interpretive marker as part of kind of the history of Confederate monument building, because what the UDC is responding to, you could argue, is South Carolina bringing down its Confederate monument, the debate over what to do with these Confederate monuments. And unfortunately, in this case, the UDC is digging in its heels and restating the false mythology of the Lost Cause. So this just says to me that interpretive markers are not the answer. And I think that communities have a moral obligation to bring down these symbols of white supremacy.
Can you tease apart white supremacy from Confederate memorialization, Chris Fonville? I mean, what do you lose if George Davis comes down or the statue to the Confederate soldiers comes down? Why is this so hard to think about as an option?
Well, I personally lose nothing, and I'm not going to lash myself to the statue of George Davis or any other statue. If people decide that the best method of dealing with this is to take them and put them in more appropriate places where they can be better interpreted, be it a museum or to a state historic site, I'm not going to fight that. But I do think that these statues have been up so long, they have become a part of the urban and historical landscape, and that I think improperly interpreted, and I agree with Monica in the case of the UDC interpretive marker at Fort Fisher. The wording is very biased, but I think properly interpreted, and you could have a number of people contribute to that interpretation, and you just lay out the arguments for and against.
What Monica just said, though, wasn't saying it was biased. She was saying it was just factually, historically incorrect. It's essentially
okay, well, prejudice,
right?
Wrong, whatever.
Okay.
Right. Whatever, she's saying or implying. But I think there is a way to do it correctly, to provide good historical context for these monuments.
Dan writes, I'm a relocated Yankee, live in Wilmington. I feel bad for Southerners as this part of their history and these statues, and I recognize they can be interpreted differently to different people. However, it appears a few squeaky wheels are now the voice of all. This appears to be a trend throughout the U.S. Let the public have a say and have it put to a vote. One man's vandalism does not necessarily represent the people. Anne writes, I was a resident of Wilmington for 12 years, passed those statues every day without really giving it much thought. They were historical monuments depicting a dark time in our history, but for me, they were not symbols of oppression as they clearly are for others. While I think that ridding ourselves of these dark reminders is a mistake, I do not think they should be put up on a pedestal. I think they belong in museums with appropriate accompanying information to give everyone greater insight. And then, Monica, I know you wanted to weigh in. We'll hear from you when we come back. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. It's a conversation about memorializing the Confederacy. After this break, we'll get to a couple more callers on the line. The number during this live Thursday show is 910-343-1138. You can also email your question to coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. It was almost exactly a year ago when we first dedicated an entire edition of Coastline to the ways southeastern North Carolina, and specifically Wilmington, memorializes the Confederacy. 1 year later, after Charlottesville, Virginia, and after the removal of these monuments in states around the American South, we're taking another look at where we are on the issue. Answering your questions today are three UNCW professors, Earl Sheridan, who's also a Wilmington City Councilman, Monica Gisolfi, and Chris Fonville are here for another few minutes. You can call in with your question on this Thursday at 910-343-1138 or email it to coastline@whqr.org. Mike writes, few people know who these people are and why there's a statue honoring the individual. Keep them up and keep the pigeons happy. And he calls this the quintessential red herring. We also have an email from Nancy. She says the statue of the Confederate soldiers is a sad and touching reminder of the lives of men lost on both sides of the tragic Civil War. It is a beautifully executed work, and I just see it as a tribute to the memory of the Confederate dead. The war was fought over 150 years ago, and the South lost. Most of the men who fought with the South were not slave owners. Only a small percentage, as I learned from the Ken Burns documentary a few years ago on the Civil War, were. And she's got a lot in this email, and I won't have time to get to it all. But I promised we'd get to Monica Gisolfi. Monica, can you speak to Nancy's idea about honoring the Confederate dead?
Well, I want to pick up of one of the things that she said, which is the tragic Civil War. If we think through the meaning of the Civil War was a revolution that led to the emancipation of 4 million people. So that is not a tragic Civil War. That is a Civil War that marks the birth of our nation and the end of slavery.
I think I want to go back to something to sort of have us refocus on what these monuments mean, because we're talking about historical markers, we're talking about contextualizing, we're talking about all of these different perhaps band-aids to these monuments. And I want to emphasize that historical monuments are an expression of power. These markers mark who has the power to choose how history is remembered in public places. These monuments tell us about the time in which they were erected, more so than the historical era they're meant to memorialize. So I don't think we should lose sight. You know, we may have all of these different remedies, putting up other monuments, putting up historical markers. At the end of the day, these historical markers are expressions of power. They were put up during the Jim Crow era to reinforce white supremacy. There was another wave of monument building in the 1950s and 1960s as a representation of massive resistance to integration. So I think it's very important to sort of refocus our discussion on what these monuments actually are, not focusing so much on kind of how we can perhaps paper over what they are.
Well, Monica, you've actually identified essentially three different waves of white supremacy. Mm-hmm. Is that fair?
Well,
when it comes to these monuments going up?
I guess it's simpler to say that there are two waves. We'll simplify it to two waves.
Okay.
of monument building. The first phase is between the 1890s and 1920s. So that's when the George Davis statue was erected and the statue to the Confederate dead in Wilmington was erected. This was a time in which the Confederacy was coming to be idealized as the so-called lost cause, and it was the time in which the Jim Crow system was being fastened upon the South. This was also the height of disenfranchisement and lynching in the United States. And so historians argue that these monuments were erected to further legitimize the Jim Crow South. The second phase, as I made reference to, was during the 1950s and 60s, and you see a proliferation of streets being named for Robert E. Lee, for Jefferson Davis, and a proliferation of monuments. And again, these were built as part of the movement for massive resistance against integration and against the Brown v. Board of Ed decision. So we need to look at them in their historical context, and we need to understand, as I said, that these are expressions of political power.
Earl Sheridan.
And I agree with what is said. They were put up as expressions of power. My argument with new monuments is that shows that this is a new day. That African Americans now have a voice and are now a part of what the South is, and thus to put up monuments to show that, to put up monuments of people that like David Walker that Southerners wanted to kill or whatever it is. And that shows that those old days, at least in the same sense that they were, we still have many, many issues and that kind of thing, but that African Americans have at least gained some power or whatever by the fact that we can put up monuments and aspects of things that recognize them. And again, also contextualize those things, that those Confederate monuments that are up.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. We have Ed from Southport. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you, Rachel, for, again, putting this program together. I recently moved from New York to Southport, and I think that we need to move away from where we were and do away with all of these symbols and move more towards the culture that we can become. I remember a conversation a couple of days ago from the head of the NAACP who ended up voicing that same direction. And if we can end up doing that, I think we will create the generational change that we need in this country. And it needs to start with discussions like your program, and it needs to cascade down into the school system as well. We need to have roundtable discussions that'll take place in some of the high schools and the colleges so we can get this message across. Generation after generation over the years since the Civil War ended continue to harbor these views. And if if we fail to end up enacting this change, shame on us, because there are a number of countries that are out there looking to the U.S. for that leadership.
Ed, specifically, what views are you talking about? We continue to harbor these views. What
sure,
do you mean? What
sure.
do you mean?
The symbols that take place here in the South are symbols of the Confederacy. And while, yes, I understand the economic impact of slavery, but it goes more than that. It cuts deeper. It's racist. All you have to do is go and attend some of the sports programs that are out there and the players that are either in the NBA or any other major association. The voices that you hear, while they're a minority, they're still generational changes that need to take place. People aren't born in this country having racist views. They're ended up being indoctrinated either through their parents or friends. And by removing these symbols, it helps remove that generational issue and people clinging to those views and values. Again, I understand it's a very hot topic and it's a very emotional topic for people who continue to end up being in their 50s, 60s, and 70s. But the change that has to take place in this country has got to be one, a long-term change. And people have got to get behind it if they're going to do anything.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Ed, for that call. And Chris Fonville, you wanted to respond to that.
I remember someone said to me one time that the statues that we erect, the names that we give to streets and buildings and parks should reflect only our values. Well, whose values are we talking about? Who gets to decide? We are a diverse community. We're a diverse nation. And I think that our statues and whatever should reflect that diversity.
And I'm going to challenge you, Chris Fonville, on diversity here in Wilmington. Actually, Wilmington is becoming less diverse as we speak. The numbers of ethnicities, other people who are not white, are shrinking.
Well, and let's try to, you know, remedy that. But we're a diverse community and a diverse nation, and I think it should reflect that. What the statues mean to some people may not mean the same thing to someone else. If you do view them as offensive, if you do see them as reflections of the lost cause, then teach that. These are wonderful objects for teaching and learning. And I think by removing them, you've denied people that opportunity.
We have an email from Valerie who writes, she is from UNCW's Department of World Languages and Culture. She says, I ask my students to write anonymously their opinion regarding Wilmington statues. These are Spanish classes, so they wrote in Spanish whether they believe these monuments should remain where they are or be removed. Thought you might be interested in the results. 50 voted to keep the monuments where they are. 37 voted to remove them. A typical keep them rationale said you cannot erase history. A typical take them down opined that we should not honor people who devoted themselves to perpetuating slavery. Thanks so much for that email, Valerie. Monica Gisolfi.
I think I want to speak to this idea of there seem to be a couple of faulty arguments. The first is erasing history. Taking down the monuments does not erase history. We don't need them to teach this dark history. We have books and documents and images and video footage to teach this history. So keeping these monuments, they're not a vehicle. They're not a vehicle for teaching Southern history. I give a walking tour where I look at white supremacy written onto the landscape. I can give that walking tour without having monuments that venerate the Confederacy. Next, I want to think through this idea of what's offensive and what's not offensive and that we need to have a diversity of ideas. In Wilmington, we have a street named for Nathan Bedford Forrest, who was a general in the Confederacy and one of the founders of the Klan. I think we can all agree, I would think at this table, we can all agree that we do not want, that we do not want a street in Wilmington named for one of the founders of the Klan. So I think that maybe this idea of a diversity and a cacophony of ideas, again, continues to obscure the fact that the monuments are an expression of power
and that they're markers of who has the power to define history in these public spaces. And that's why I think that there is an argument that can be made for taking them down, a moral argument that can be made for taking them down.
Chris Fonville.
There are another tool for teaching. You said yourself that on your walking tours, you talk about the landscape of Southern racism. Yes, it's true. We have documents, we have books, we have historians, but we also have these monuments that can provide good objects for teaching and for learning. Monica said herself that she uses these monuments.
What do you say?
I do the same thing when I take my walking tours of downtown Wilmington. I put them into the right historical context.
What do you say when she says things like, this monument is an expression of power? It's an expression of what was happening during the time it was erected.
When it was erected, who had power?
Right.
And that's a lesson that we should talk about. We need to talk about the South's complex, troubled, and dark past. And by removing these statues, I think we remove an opportunity to do that. Nothing teaches like something as visual as a monument.
Mitch Landrieu, mayor of New Orleans, who famously took down, this was, you know, international story when he made his big speech about why he had chosen to remove these monuments. He said, it is self-evident that these men did not fight for the United States of America. They fought against it. They may have been warriors, but in this cause, they were not patriots. These statues are not just stone and metal. They are not just innocent remembrances of a benign history. These monuments purposefully celebrate a fictional, sanitized Confederacy, ignoring the death, ignoring the enslavement, and the terror that it actually stood for. So, Chris Fonville, if you're taking, let's say, a 7-year-old boy through a walking tour, and you're explaining to him in very simple terms what these monuments mean, and let's say that he is a African-American boy. How do you feel when you have to explain to him that this person, George Davis, who fought to keep his ancestors as property, how do you feel explaining that to him and that this man is now in this sort of position of power at the entrance to the city?
I've done this many, many times on public walking tours and walking tours with my students. As far as the Confederate soldier was concerned, I think those monuments were put up, or they reflect who the common soldiers were. The United States government recognizes that Confederate soldiers were simply American fighting men. To this day, taxpayers' expense, a descendant of a Confederate soldier can get a grave marker to him. So they were simply American fighting soldiers. Were they fighting for a bad cause? Absolutely. Was George Davis, as a representative of the Confederacy, perpetuating slavery? Absolutely. But I teach that. I provide the historical context.
And Earl Sheridan.
Again, my view is that you need to contextualize this on any kind of walker tour. There needs to be information that provides the other aspect of things. I think these statues standing there by themselves where they are now, it is a bad thing. I mean, you must either contextualize them, build additional statues, or they should come down. I mean, just leaving them there just like it is now is not good.
Monica Gisolfi.
I think what I see sort of taking away from this conversation is that we all agree that these are symbols of racism and injustice. And this then suggests that we want to move forward with this conversation of what then do we do? What then do we do with these symbols that we all agree represent racism and injustice?
And on that note, Gareth Evans of the Bellamy Mansion has expressed that same sentiment. And we will post that on our website. That's this edition of Coastline. Monica Gisolfi, Chris Fonville, Earl Sheridan, thank you all so much for being here today. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org. Get the podcast. You can find it on the WHQR app. Tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 2. Join us for Coastline Live Wednesdays and Thursdays at noon. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.